When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. Quick disclaimer for today's interview. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, and we are going to use some strong language, which may not be appropriate for all of our fellow conspiracy realists.
So if you've got any kids in the car, maybe don't play this episode. But here's the great thing. There's so many episodes to choose from. Just scroll down that list and grab a different one.
Unless you got one of those swearing babies from TikTok, then they'll learn some new choice phrases and words from our buddy Jeremy Corbell on today's episode.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It finally happened, folks, fellow conspiracy realists. After decades of rumor, speculation, so many reports of strange things in the sky, the United States Congress, just yesterday as we record, held a public hearing on unidentified aerial phenomenon, which literally everybody else calls UFOs. They also held a second non-public hearing, which we'll get to in a bit. This comes on the heels of a report published about 11 months ago. We discussed this in depth on a previous episode, and the world has been watching to see what, if anything, Uncle Sam would disclose in that conversation. Today, we're exploring the context of this hearing, the ramifications, what it means for the world of ufology and the world at large. We're not diving in alone. That's right. We're thrilled to welcome back today's special guest, a good friend of ours in real life, friend of the show. You've heard him called four names before. You've heard him called JKLC. But to us, this is our good friend, the documentarian, author, and artist, Jeremy Corbell. Jeremy, thank you for coming back on the show, especially because this is, safe to say, probably been kind of a busy time for you recently.
Oh, yeah, man. This is Vietnam. It's blue skies. There's no rules. It's totally insane. But I'm excited to be speaking with you guys, and I'm big fans of your show and each of what you do. So thank you.
Man, we are very excited to have you here, Jeremy. You know, a little peek behind the curtain. We finally got on a text thread with Jeremy after, you know, emailing back and forth for years. And all of us
We're lively text thread.
Well, I mean, we've just been anticipating that something like this would happen, right? I think all of us.
Yeah.
And every time we anticipate something like that, we get excited because we feel like something big and breaking is going to occur. Someone is going to say something in this hearing that's going to make all of us have giant eyes and just go, it's real. The X-Files poster behind me lets you know exactly how I feel about UFOs and how badly I want to believe. Jeremy, I want to just get your initial reaction to this hearing.
To the hearing itself, yeah, sure. Look, I am an eternal optimist. You know, I am accused of that on a daily basis, and I am guilty of that. Every day, human knowledge expands like just a little bit. And even for me, it's like what, in regards to UFOs, what was science fiction yesterday is now becoming like science fact. And yeah, man, UFOs, it's not a matter of belief. That's a data poor perspective. We now live in a world, our children will grow up in a world that is a data rich environment regarding UFOs. So as the kind of eternal optimist, guilty as charged, I actually, despite the lies, obfuscation, closed door, classified briefing after the open congressional briefing, what happened yesterday is a benchmark. It is a public demanded and actually actuated moment that is historic. We haven't had congressional hearings on UFOs in over 50 years. Not only that, but like they showed some new footage and what happened was a symbol of public will. I mean, fucking UFO Twitter, man. I mean, people make a joke. No, you know, nobody reads this shit. Oh, yeah, they do. Every congressman, every senator, they're on Twitter, they're on Instagram, and they read their comments because they're vain. So like, here's the deal. And because it's elections coming up in a lot of places. So here's the deal, man. More than that, they're human. So we're talking about unhuman. They're human like us. So
presumably.
Like, they represented us, man. Yesterday was huge. It was fucking huge. And it's important. And it's a symbol of public will and representative government. I couldn't be more excited.
Mm. And this is the culmination, I would say, of a very long journey. So folks, Jeremy and our crew have been in contact for a number of years. You're quite a prolific filmmaker. And we always, I think it's what people call a good problem to have. We always end our shows together saying, ah, shit, we got to, you know, we have to come back because we didn't even scratch the surface of some stuff. But for anyone who doesn't know, Jeremy has been in the investigative trenches on not just this subject, but many other related subjects for quite a long time, far before, I would argue, the quote unquote mainstream public turned their collective attention to this. So for anyone who is maybe somehow new to your work, what got you started on this path originally, and did you ever see it leading to where we are now?
I never saw it leading to where I am the least qualified person to be in the position I am making films about this shit or being on newscasts. Like I was a mixed martial athlete, man. That I started training jiu-jitsu when I was 9 and boxing and wrestling was 9 years old. I never thought It, like a moment in my life before this started, I never thought I'd be involved. I was curious. You know, I heard Bob Lazar on the radio with George Knapp, like everybody else in 1989. I was 13 years old. But I will say, I this is not a joke to me. My curiosity was weaponized, man. And what I mean by that is I started fucking shooting hellfire missiles at my brain. Like I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay, universe is vast. There's probably life everywhere, but they ain't coming here. And then hearing Bob Lazar describe with George Knapp the propulsion system, how like you put a bowling ball on a bed and push your fist down onto the bed and the bowling ball will fall to your fist. It's different than rockets to roller skates, you know, traditional propulsion. I thought, whoa, warping space time. That means people could come here, people from other places. So as a kid, I just got like weaponized, man. But I was just a professional, mixed martial athlete, not fighting professionally, but you know, you have more fights on professionally.
Jeremy's got a Sakuraba shirt on, by the way.
You know what it is?
Yeah, it's the Gracie killer right there.
Saku is my number one. He doesn't win every fight, but he's always triumphant. Anyway, so I just like so to answer your question directly, no man, I never thought I would be involved with this. I was not even a filmmaker. Got no teaching in that way. Luckily, I got a good eye, is what they say. And I was able to be perceived as trustworthy. And the way to be perceived as trustworthy is to fucking be trustworthy. And so it took me years, man. But that camera that I got for my wedding gift, that was a Canon 5D, the shot video, that was, I realized the moment I turned it on, that was my passport into the unknown. People started telling me shit that they didn't tell their own wives, their own families. I mean, they shouldn't be telling me. And so 90% of what I film and record, I can't yet put out. But like, man, that's how it started for me. It's just, I am curious too. I want to know what the truth is about these objects, these physical machines that we call UFOs and are associated with all sorts of strange phenomena that people would call like paranormal, for lack of a better term, because we don't even know what that means. It's paranormal till it's normal, right? So what are UFOs? What do they represent to humanity? Where are we sitting in this universe? What does it mean to be part of a larger ecosystem? That's what drives me. You know, this is not something that I directly get paid for. You know, if I make any money, it's because I make films and products and hope people like them. But really, I got a day job, man. So this for me is passion.
Oh, I love that. I love that, Jeremy. Got a day job, man. I remember specifically feeling that way when we started making the video series of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Of like, we have a day job. We got to make these videos for this company. Ben's writing them. I'm editing them. But our like exciting thing that we did was make the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know videos. I know exactly what you mean.
Those hooked me years and years and years ago. Man, those hooked me. I say, what do they not want me to know? What don't they want me to know?
So much stuff.
Just to get into your curiosity and your experience here, because I think you're underselling yourself a little bit when it comes to being an expert in this, just because every time you look at it, you're learning something, right? And you're sharing it with us, with everyone. You recently went on Coast to Coast with George Knapp, and you were there with, I think Dave Foley was on the phone at one point, and you guys told a crazy story. I don't want to take away from that interview, so everybody go listen to that episode of Coast to Coast if you can. But just tell us about the experience you had with Dave Foley.
Oh, God, you go right into outing me, coming out the closet with UFOs. You know, oh, the UFO guy sees a UFO. No one's going to believe me. You know,
but I'm not trying to out you, dude. I loved the story.
Foley outed me. Like, it was a private experience. It was so cool, but it's ironic. It's even more ironic when I explain it to you. So yeah, I went on Coast to Coast with, you know, the epic godfather, George Knapp, from breaking stories from the mob to the mundane to the most extraordinary UFOs. This guy, George Knapp, man, he's a national treasure. He's a global treasure. And luckily, he's guided my dumb ass along the whole way. You know, once he picked up my phone after 2 years of calling him. But anyway, so what happened? We told the story on Coast to Coast. Okay, look, I live in a non-disclosed location. It was outed by a tabloid. But I live in an area that's beautiful. It's, you know, got open skies and so have you heard of Pioneer Town specifically? Mm. It's a really cool place in the Mojave Desert. So basically what's going on is this. I'm walking with my buddy Dave Foley. For those of you that don't know, he's from Kids in the Hall. He's a comic, an actor, just a all around hell of a guy. But he's also, you know, very rationally minded and skeptical, and, you know, uses his joke of cynicism. But he was turned back on to UFOs after seeing my Bob Lazar film, Bob Lazar, Area 51 and Flying Saucer. So he saw that, went on the Rogan podcast, got turned back on to UFOs, you know, and we connected. So he became a friend. He came to the Storm Area 51 event with me, and he was like, oh, no, I'm in. Like, can I stay in your RV. I'm like, dude, I snore. Are you ready? So he earned my respect and my trust because of how he just jumped in. So look, what I'm saying is I'm just hanging out with a friend. So he makes a joke to me. We're out walking, sun's going down, beautiful night. And he says, oh, Jeremy, I expected, you know, go see the UFO expert, whatever that means. And he goes, I thought I'd see a UFO. He's fucking with me. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, very funny, Dave. You're a comedian. You should try that out for a living.
Da-da-da-da.
It wasn't 45 seconds after he said that, that I said, Dave, turn around. And he turns around, and I wasn't sure what was going on. He turns around, and look, man, people don't get this. I am the not only the most one of the most skeptical people, because UFOs are real, but most stories aren't. But also, like, I have the ability to, like, I go deep. I monitor satellites. I monitor the International Space Station. I've got contacts, you know, within the military to tell me if something special is flying over. Holy cow. For the first time in my life, I saw an undeniable, double verified, what we'd call a UFO, but it didn't look anything like I would imagine. It was a huge machine. And it looked to me like, it looked like a, like in a comic book from the 1940s, like Rocket Man. It was like crazy looking. And I've practiced this like quick draw with my camera where I'm like, boom, and I record and mm-hmm. boom, like that. And I remember saying out loud, I'm not even going to lift my camera because I'm going to miss this. I thought it was going to be a short event. Dave's eyes go as big as saucers. We're looking and we're going back and forth with this banter, trying to dismiss it. What happens is an object descends at 45 degrees from our angle of observation at an extraordinary speed. And it is glowing and bright, and it fucking boom. And then it moves across laterally low. I mean, it was probably a couple miles from us, but that's pretty close. I feel grateful. The most impressive part to me is different than the most impressive part to Dave Foley. He said, he describes the shape as like a hamburger with a bite out the front. It was like a, I don't know, whatever that looks like. But it had three big lights, almost like it was technology. It had big lights on the front, but that wasn't interesting. What was interesting was the entire body of this craft was glowing. It was not shining light. It was glowing. And when it slipped across across the valley, the area where I was, it pulsed with every time it slipped, and it was like this impossible slip. And it made me think of Kenneth Arnold when he, said flying saucer. That was a misquote. They were kind of wing shaped. It was the way it moved, like skipping a stone. This every time it moved four times, like that, it moved so impossible. It was impossible. It moved so impossibly fast. And it pulsed with this, not the three lights on the front, the body of it. So that struck me. The magnitude of power, the energy it took to do this, no sonic booms, no sound. And he keeps saying, we reacted really strangely to that. He's hung up on that. And he's right. We did react strangely to it. And we thought it would be over. It goes, boom, you know, across this area. And it stops. And it hovers over this mountain ridge. And we think it's going to end. It's going to end. It's going to end. And then about minute and a half later, it just slowly descends on the other side of the mountain. And I look at Dave, I go, well, who is the UFO expert now, Dave?
Oh, geez, man. I can't imagine having that kind of experience.
I finally saw one, you guys.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
I think we all want that so badly. I've never seen one like that or anything like that where I couldn't, you know, explain. I've had plenty of times where I look up and I'm like, oh, what the heck is that? And I can tell, I can rationalize, oh, well, that's, you know, a satellite. That's the way those lights are flashing. I know that's an aircraft that was built by man. I just don't know what it is or why it is there.
I always bring this up whenever we talk about this kind of stuff. But I mean, I feel like I saw one many years ago in Kansas area. Like it was like, you know, I was on tour with a band and in the distance, very flat lands, corn fields. I saw this triangular thing that just didn't make sense the size it was on the horizon, given its distance from where I was. And I was moving. And, you know, when you see large objects from a distance, they move differently than close up objects. And it stayed its course on the horizon. And I've got DV footage of it somewhere. I've been promising to dig it out, but I swear to God, man. I bring this up because in some of the descriptions that we're going to hear about from the hearings, that triangular flavor of these is one that comes up. So I'm always remarking back on that memory.
We're going to get into that, man. That's like saying an orange is a circle. Like that.
Yes.
Like a two-dimensional description of something that's three-dimensional. We're going to get the fuck into that. But yeah, Noel, dude, I want to see the footage, bro.
I'm going to dig. I'm moving now, so perfect timing to dig through all the archives and put my hands on it.
It will hold nice. You to it.
Have fun with the move.
Yeah.
Please. I need someone to hold me to it. Yeah.
You should see that. You should see the smile Jeremy just delivered with that. Have fun with the move. Everybody has.
Right.
It's very relatable, I think, movie. And speaking of relatable, right, we know you mentioned the idea of weaponizing curiosity, which I find incredibly compelling. And I think being curious about anything is a plus. I don't believe in dumb questions. I believe in sincere exploration of things. And one thing that we see now is a paradigm shift in the world of UFO reporting. It's being destigmatized to a great degree. And one thing that you have excelled at in the course of your investigations is you've been able to contact people or be contacted by people who ordinarily, like you said, wouldn't tell anyone about this because of that stigma. So I'm curious, and I think a lot of people are curious about the process that you found yourself engaging in to have this exclusive access to people, this rapport with people, I think it goes back to. And then perhaps most importantly, I do want to highlight this for anyone who doesn't know. One of the things that happened with Congress and with branches of the military specifically is that Jeremy got a hold of some footage that they would rather not, rather the public not know about. So like, what's the process? Is that weird? Have you ever felt in physical danger? I meant to ask one question. That was like 20, but you know.
Yeah. Stigma, process, and what is it like releasing this stuff? And do you feel in danger? So you got to remember those four. I'm not going to remember.
Yeah, okay,
so
let's just,
stigma. Okay. Let's talk about that. Okay. Let's start with that, but let's get to the other three. So yeah, man, look, secrecy and actually Representative Carson said this when he was setting up these, you know, public open UFO congressional hearings, as he said, secrecy can serve as an obstacle to solving the UFO mystery. Well, look, man, overclassification and secrecy, can really cause our minds to fill in those blanks. And he also said that this hearing is about examining steps that the Pentagon can take to reduce stigma. I mean, this is him saying why he put the hearings together. So stigma and secrecy can cause real problems when we're trying to solve any mystery. I mean, you exclude the scientific community because they're so worried. Like Neil deGrasse Tyson is so behind on this because he's so worried about keeping a public persona. They should be salivating over the evidence we have. So stigma is like, it's a cancer, man. It's a virus. So the idea of stigma, you know, when we were growing up, probably saying UFO, you're the crazy person talking about it. But every single person had a story from top military brass to, you know, a kid I met, you know, serving chai in Rishikesh, India. Everybody had a story about UFOs that either they saw or somebody they trust saw and told them. So this idea of stigma is, it creates a dance that you have to do. And that this moves into, I think, your second question, which is the process, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The stigma is being dissolved. And I personally am fighting really hard to dissolve it because how can we have an honest, rational, open conversation when on one side You have what they call skeptics or debunkers. All they're trying to do is fit the world into their worldview in the most, you know, mental gymnastics worthy of a gold medal. I mean, they are the conspiracy theorists, because if you believe them, you have to believe something more extraordinary functionally happened than people are telling the truth and it's picked up on radar. So reducing stigma is so important. How that affects my work, right? And was that your second question, was process?
Yes, yep, just so.
Okay. How that affects my work is, look, you know, if someone doesn't know me back years ago, it's like, I'm some guy you can look up that's just kind of like an artist guy, maybe a jiu-jitsu guy that has a camera. Maybe he's even like a UFO nut, you know, in their mind. So imagine me calling up one of the top command within the USS Nimitz, right? The battleship, and being like, hey, my name is Jeremy Corbell. I'm, you know, kind of like a reporter. I make some films, and you don't know me, and nobody knows I'm calling you, but somebody really important told me to call you. Can we talk for a second? I mean, the stigma, bam, was about UFOs. That can be a real problem. However, if people are comfortable, all of a sudden, man, do they want to tell this story? Because people don't listen. So now, luckily, I've carved out, again, in order to be trustworthy in people's minds, the best way to do that is to actually be fucking trustworthy. And I have proven myself, not by what I have reported, obtained, and released, but by what I haven't reported or released. So people have started to trust me. So now my job is becoming easier when it comes to the stigma thing. Every single day, my email is like a Vegas slot machine at midnight. I just boom, 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 coming in reports from military to, by the way, 90% civilian, because we capture UFOs more than anybody. So that's the process of earning trust. Once you've earned trust in one way, which for me started really with George Knapp, took me 2 years to get the guy to call me back. And that's a funny story if you want to hear it and have time, but whatever, call me back. And then from there, he's guided me as a mentor. I mean, you know, straight up. And I'm so grateful for that. And I can name drop him sometimes. That really helps. But now, you know, because with witnesses, it's difficult. He's a trusted journalist. But now people are coming directly to me. People from within our intelligence communities, analysts, military people at high rank and just beginning in our military process. And they are, at their own peril and risk, oftentimes supplying me with footage and documentation of one of the greatest mysteries that we have, which is the UFO mystery. So that's the process and that stigma. And there was one last question, which was
physical. Let's go to this one. Yeah. Did you ever feel that you were maybe in physical danger, or did anybody exercise intimidation tactics or something? That's something a lot of our audience is curious about.
Well, I'm clumsy, so I'm always worried about physical danger. And my wife is my alien overlord boss and is threatening me constantly for good reason, because I should be. Other than that, no, man, I have always been assisted, never resisted when it comes to the military process. Like, you know, people want, numerous people that want this information public too. I just want to make sure I'm on the right side of the law. I'm dealing with sensitive information. If I get footage, you know, that was filmed by an agency in an active war zone that might show capability on our side or even optics capability, I need to make sure I don't want to hurt. I have no reason to try to harm the United States and what they're doing in the Department of Defense. So I've tried to be as transparent as possible without revealing sources to the mechanisms of government that would like to know about this. I actually send a lot of what I get. Well, that sounded weird. I don't just send it. I inform our Department of Defense of things that I'm going to release once it's for sure going to be released. And I make sure that there's nothing I don't know about that. And usually they're grateful. They're great, you know, caught, ruffle some feathers, because why do I have it and they don't? But like, that's because I should be obsolete, because the process should be better for people. And they understand that. I understand that. And I'm fighting to try to get an immunity process set up. So when George and I put stuff out, you know, it doesn't hurt national security and there's immunity for people because they can go on a hunt, but I'm pretty good at covering my tracks. So that's, I've never been threatened. Not a day in my life. Not by military government people. I mean, by individuals every day. People are crazy. What can you do? Right. But not by our military. To answer your question directly, no, I've never felt any kind. They did an investigation into my sources and George's sources, and I get that. I would do the same thing, but no, never a threat.
That's
never
awesome.
Once.
That's really heartening, I think.
Yeah, congratulations.
for surviving.
Yeah, because it does seem dangerous. I think just from this end, when you talked about, you know, high ranking officers, low ranking officers who are stationed, you know, for the Navy on, let's say, a destroyer like the Russell, the Nimitz, people who are actually filming footage through whatever mechanism they're using, you know, on one of those destroyers or on one of those battleships.
Yeah, like the Omaha and the Russell in 2019 specifically is what would reference closest to what you're saying. Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, this is military personnel. I think that just over the conversations that we've had on the show over the past couple of years, it has really been that has been the difference. Military personnel shot footage that we can now see. And
did the Pentagon confirms?
Yes. Yes. It's like the Pentagon confirms that this is footage of unknown, you know, something of unknown origin, or at least.
Do you want to know what happened after that last release, by the way?
Yes.
I don't think people know this. So this is like in the minutia, but why did the Pentagon confirm the first three videos and all the, I think it was six photos that George and I released? And then on that last one, it was like the least impressive visually, but it's like dark. And there's like these little lights over it, which is, by the way, a really important piece of footage. And I'll explain why. Why did the Pentagon say we can't comment? That was what they said in the official FOIAs and when people emailed. Why on that one, after that huge run of releasing stuff where they're like, yep, that's real. Yep, that's real. I'll tell you why. I made sure they were in a position to know that that it was true before I publicly released them with all the other footage. There was a policy shift that was a reaction. The moment George Knapp and I kind of were on a roll with these, and I will tell you, you're going to have to take my word for it, but I think there is documentation of it. They changed policy when they saw what was going on with the content, the corroborative video evidence that we released, me and George, and now any UAP, I don't even want to say it, man, but any UAP footage is designated, all caps, secret, non-share, even with allies. So they tried to, boom, put a stop to the leaks at that moment. And they the word I can't comment on that last piece, which is deck footage from the USS Omaha. So that's why that happened. That's what's in place now. What they did not anticipate, that tenfolded people reaching out to me. It tenfolded it.
Can you describe that footage just a little more so people listening can look it up and find it?
Sure. So I think the important part is if you go to like my Instagram, because that's where I dropped everything first, which is just at Jeremy Corbell, you can see with all the description, right? You can see exactly the details that are factual and I know for sure and that I put out and provided proof of. The footage I'm talking about is the last piece in that four video set of footage. There's three pieces of evidence from the USS Omaha specifically, with a fourth, which is the Green Pyramid from the USS Russell, all the same event in 2019 off the coast of California. Out of the four pieces of footage, you have FLIR, forward-looking infrared, which is thermal video of an object that appears to descend into the water that our military thought was transmedium, and they sent a submarine to try to go after either wreckage or the craft itself. Then I provided radar footage, and this is actual radar from the USS Omaha of these unidentified swarming that Navy warship and, wow, moving damn fast if you listen to what is said in there. And then, of course, I released the – so there's three pieces of footage there. I released the deck footage, it's called. And it just looks like inky black darkness, right? And it's just got these lights. But why that last piece of corroborative video evidence is important, because this is, as a kid, what I always wanted was military film from multiple angles, different sensor platforms, and then official, formerly classified, now non-classified documents, because I released it, which is that one slide from the USS Omaha. That is evidence, man. And so all of that together, that last piece of footage, what people will see is this inky blackness and these kind of like amber or red looking lights. But what's important is that that excludes glitches within the radar systems, that these were light, they were powered, they were craft. So each thing together adds a piece to the puzzle. So you just look at this kind of inky blackness with lights, but that piece of footage was so important, or additionally important, and it was, that was the one where they stopped us, they cut us off, they turned off the well, the Pentagon says, we're not confirming anything else. Well, I got the entirety of all that footage. I only gave them pieces. So there is more.
We're going to pause here for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be back with more from Jeremy Corbell.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with more from Jeremy Corbell.
I think it's interesting being able to get in on something on the ground floor that, you know, maybe when you get in on it, you don't even know it's the ground floor yet. It's just something that you're interested in, and it doesn't really even exist in a way that ultimately will. I think about that in terms of podcasting. We were very lucky that we had a podcast when there were like 10 podcasts. So it's not the best comparison, but you've been asking these questions and dealing with that stigma for years. I mean, we have too, but you very specifically around this discipline, these types of questions. How does it feel to, I mean, is it a kind of vindication, and how does it empower you to move forward to have a member of Congress more or less apologize and say, hey, this stigma has essentially, you know, created an environment where pilots don't want to report things that could actually be helpful and valuable, because at the end of the day, the justification is all about national security. That's what this is all wrapped up in. It's not necessarily about, you know, wanting to believe in maybe the ways that we look at it. It's all wrapped up in this idea of how do we protect our country? And that's the only way they can really kind of, you know, package it in a way that they can stomach. But to say that, you know, openly, a member of government to say this was a real thing, this stigma, and it potentially caused how God knows how many legitimate reports to go unreported. How do you feel about that? How does it feel to have been on the ground floor of that, asking these questions, and now it's almost like the doors are wide open?
Well, the door, we got our toe in the door. Let's not get over
maybe not wide open, but there's a toe. There's a door stopper.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to kick it the fuck wide open. I mean, I can promise you that everything I've said I've done in this field and everything else I've done in life, I've said it, I've done it. And I'm telling you, I'm going to kick that door open wider than you can imagine. I mean, I got footage I'm gonna release. I just need to make sure people don't get in trouble. But your question was like a vindication, like, how do you feel? I think that was your question.
Yeah, kind of. I just mean, like, in, you know, how do you feel even like for these folks that maybe did take the plunge and report these things, you know, some of the footage, you know, from pilots.
Vindication for everybody.
For everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So vindication is when somebody feels that people didn't believe them and they were telling the truth. And then all of a sudden people realized they were telling the truth. So the only people that feel vindication are people that are insecure about what other people think about what they're saying. I think it's great that the public is catching up, that, you know, they've been 4 cents short of a nickel when it comes to UFOs, and that it wasn't even their own fault, man. It's because they're all the stigma and kind of what people have been told they're supposed to understand and believe about UFOs. It literally wasn't the fault of public knowledge that it was like this gap of reality and what was believed or thought about. So vindication itself, I think it's a waste of time, man. I think I'm too busy moving forward. I'm very happy for people that feel vindicated because they needed that. I think the pilots, I think it is a big deal for, because it was actually functional vindication. And that's a different thing. It was functional vindication. So some pilots, they could have their wings taken, their entire career, their dreams, their hopes, their desires for the future gone because people think they're not wrapped so tight because they report they saw something. But now with all the radar and collective accumulative AI technology that links all the radars together with incredible systems such as the Spy One that can reach 80,000 feet, you know, it's like all of a sudden vindication for those people, those American heroes that some of them engaged UFOs, many of them. And this is something Congress lied about. Many of them, we have fired upon these unidentifieds, by the way. Okay. So for these people, I am so happy for them. For me personally, all I care about is that my puppy loves me, my wife loves me, and my family doesn't think I'm too out of this world. You know what I mean? When it comes to my passion about this stuff.
And I guess when I say kick the door open, I'm specifically referring to people that maybe would have not reported seeing these things. People with credibility. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
No, that's a huge deal. So let's address that for just 30 seconds here. What we're seeing now is permission being given, not yet the process to do it, but the permission being given to say, hey, okay, I had a near miss. Hey, I saw this thing. Hey, what should I fire on this? What's going on? Should we communicate? Should I send out a signal? What's going on? So what you said, Noel, is really important. We have now got to the point where we're destigmatizing it just one degree. It was 104 degrees. Now it's 100 and maybe 2 degrees. We're bringing down the temperature so people can report this shit, right? And that is so important, not just for national security, but because people hold these secrets. And that is, to hold a secret like that is, it impairs your health.
Agreed, 100%. And that's something, you know, what's really standing out to me in this conversation, and as I'm just keeping some notes here, is I think it is incredibly important, I would even say mission critical, for you and George Knapp to be actively constructing a process like this, right? That first, make sure that it's not in publication is not endangering anyone. And then secondly, that anonymity is possible. And I want to thank you for that. We have a lot of veterans in the audience today. And it is a statistical certitude, dude, that several of them have probably seen some things and they haven't felt like they would be able to report it without there being some sort of possible consequence. Like you said, functional validation, people's careers are on the line and it's not easy to become a pilot, right? I mean, that's just true.
Well, and it's not just pilots. And look, you said two things. You said the national security, but then anonymity. But here's the deal. Fuck anonymity. A lot of these people, their active duty right now, have actually gone on record with me, recorded, so that, and they trust me, and I can release that after they're out. But what we're trying to do is make sure that we can put that, they're okay talking about it, but they're just not, the repercussions could be horrible. So I want to make sure there's an immunity there, so they can, no mm-hmm. anonymity. They want to tell you what they saw, even if it's closed door briefings with Congress and not like on the news or something with me. That's what I'm fighting for, is immunity for people to actually come forward, because they want to, like the USS Russell and the whole, like, you know, swamp gas, I don't know the word they use, like a fake aperture thing, you know, all the idiot debunkers. Like, they don't know what I know. They don't know what they know. And that was a sideshow swamp gas thing. So here's the deal. Like, I have witnesses from that event. Now, they're active. I've documented with them. I want to be able to put that out. I want them to be able to come forward. But we need something in process in order to be able to do that.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a key point, and it's a game changer, and it's something that has to occur, that has to exist, right, to move this exploration further along. With that, I know we have a lot of stuff to discuss, but I would just love to get briefly your hot take, if hot it is, on the public hearing in Congress yesterday, where you showed up in name, and then also maybe a little speculation about the second closed door hearing. Just like, it, was there anything different?
So any take you get right now on the hearing is going to be a hot take, because it just happened. I got to watch a couple of times, man. When it was going on, I had, you know, 40,000 things pinging in my head and on my phone. So my hot take on it, right? Like, kind of what I thought was like kind of big is what you're mm-hmm. saying at that moment. Mm-hmm. Specifics?
Yeah.
Is that
what
you want? Okay. I mean, other than it was really amazing and important, and it was the start, it was the benchmark that I happen to know, and I am telling you now that there's going to be more, and that there's going to be direct witnesses who can speak with more education and clarity than people that were sent there by their bosses to protect national security, like the top brass we did have in front of Congress. We're going to have people like Commander David Fravor, people like the great Lou Elizondo, who ran ATIP. We should have Dr. James Lukatsky, who ran the only funded, the $22 million UFO program with Dr. Colin Kelleher, called AWSAP, Advanced Aerospace Weapon System Applications Program, that then Lou Elizondo grabbed the reins like a warrior and started ATIP, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. And, you know, and then we go to the UAP Task Force and three different versions of it. But what we saw there in that briefing yesterday, besides the symbolic nature and the new UFO video, we saw that, first of all, they got a lot of catching up to do. The Congress people were exceptional. Congressman Gallagher was, his questions were incredibly powerful. And Representative Carson, he pushed the witnesses with his opening statement. I mean, he really set the tone. You know, and the point was to destigmatize so reporting could be better and to earn back the American trust. And I don't know anything about politics or any of their politics. All I know is what they just said about UFOs and this was, and about secrecy and overclassification in general. So my hot take is that, yes, there were some lies, there was some obfuscation. There's just, we don't know. They were ignorant on certain things. And also those two guys, I would have a lot of other people up there, but it was good we did it. And they're having a closed door briefing afterwards because of classification. And notice every time that that they said, we're going to have to do that in the closed door briefing after. That is because there's information that they can answer, but only under, so there's some yeses there you should have paid attention to. So, you know, have UFOs altered our technological capabilities or methods, right, in warfare? Save that for the closed briefings. That's what he said. Right? You know, they were wrong or lying or obfuscating or not informed when they asked about like basically UFO crashes or materials. That's provable. That's verifiable. And more of that's coming out. And they were wrong or lied. So yeah, we do have, I'll say, to be very conservative, materials associated with UFOs. Someone other than me, Robert Bigelow, who ran, who you know, was a big part of the UFO whole, you know, thing with the government, specifically said we have machinery. So machinery is like mechanisms that work together. I'll go one step further, whether you believe him or not, Bob Lazar is telling you straight exactly what happened to him. We have craft, and there's documentation that I think George Knapp and I will be exposing from Russia that clearly state that there are exploitation or reverse engineering programs. So from that hearing, those are some of the things that they said that you should pay attention to. You know, they admitted the UFO Nimitz was a UFO event. Well, duh, we all knew that. They committed to sharing like more national security things, that cases that didn't deal with national security. I don't know, man. My hot take, the big hot take is this. I'm sorry, I'm ranting here. The big hot take is this. They fucked up when it came to talking about the video I released with the green pyramid-shaped triangle by angle of observation night vision footage from the USS Russell. That's cool. They fucking lied about it. But that's okay, because I'll be able to prove that wrong.
Hold the phone. Let's take a quick pause. We'll come back to this, put a pin in it, and be back with more fascinating discussion with Jeremy Corbell.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All all these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we've returned.
All right, well, let's get into it. So one of the main arguments that I've seen about that specific video footage of the green pyramids, green triangles, it would be a pyramid and not a triangle, as we discussed earlier.
It doesn't matter if it's seagulls with lights strapped onto them. They're unknowns, and we should know what to do with them as our military.
Yes.
By the way, it doesn't really matter, but yeah.
I agree. It doesn't really matter, but maybe some of you have seen this, or maybe you haven't seen this, or you've heard something. So I just want to make sure, Jeremy, you comment on it, and we get that from you rather than just hearsay that people find on the internet. There's one person speaking out about this that I've seen him in the New York Post and a couple other places, an author named Mick West, and he's just put forward that, he's a skeptic. And again, I think everyone should be, just as Jeremy stated, you are, be skeptical about the stuff, but make sure you think about everything. Look at every angle. Don't just take, the skeptical stance and throw things out the window. I don't think that's what Mick is doing. Mick is just saying I think Occam's razor is that these are planes. This is footage of planes. The reason why they look like pyramids is because of the aperture of the camera that was taking the footage, and it's night vision, so they appeared that green color, and they've got flashing lights that appear to be what a plane would have, the warning lights.
Yeah, if I was just looking at it from outside, that would be Occam's razor on that specific event. However, you bring up kind of something that's more of a disease. It's more of a mental disease, because you have to look at the history of people's work and how their bias, how they're always continuously trying to not just analyze it, but prove the mundane, no matter how insane it is. So in general, let's talk about it generally, but let's take one specific case that this has been done to, right? So that's debunking rather than I'm a skeptic too. That's the thing. People might not appreciate how much I vet things, work that I have to do, and what I do before I put anything out, because everybody wants to catch me in a mistake. If I ever made a mistake, oh man, everybody makes mistakes. I'll admit I made a mistake. It just hasn't happened yet with this. Now if that does happen, oh man, no problem. We're all human. As I told you, I'm clumsy. If I make a mistake, physically clumsy, not mentally clumsy, then no problem. I'll admit that. But let me give you a specific example of something. You're being very, nice in the way you describe this skepticism thing. There's a difference between being skeptical and having an intent to debunk with a predetermined outcome. And that's where this virus, this mental, it really is a mental illness we're seeing with people like this. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to give you a specific example. So here we go. The TikTok UFO case. What is Occam's razor? Is Occam's razor the most mundane explanation, or is it kind of the most direct and obvious? I mean, I haven't looked up the definition, but I'm pretty sure it says in the dictionary, Occam's razor, not the most mundane is the answer, right? So if you believe, and it's a matter of belief because we're not there, if you believe the military pilots, if you believe the radar systems, if you believe the investigation that went on for years, actually multiple investigations from intelligence agencies, one of which George Knapp made public, if you believe that stuff, then Occam's razor says the pilots saw what they said they saw, the radars picked up what they appeared to pick up, and everything occurred on that day precisely as it has been described, that this is not pilot error, this is not radar glitches, that these were physical objects. And then there's the stuff they don't want you to know, which is that we have other optics systems that I can't confirm nor deny that I am privy to that were able to capture these same series of events with the TikTok UFO. But now, because you mentioned Occam's razor, you mentioned some of the people that have this, what I would call a mental illness, right? And again, not to be mean, this is not, maybe I should choose a different word, but like it's like a virus when they want to prove their worldview. If you were to believe these known debunkers, not even skeptics, here's what you would need to believe about the TikTok UFO case. This is a conspiracy theory. It is a mental gymnastics worthy of a gold medal. You have multiple pilots in air, all testifying to having seen the same thing. Not a glare in the windshield, not a glitch on their radar, optically see the same thing. Trained fighter pilots. So now you're talking about, you'd have to believe not only one person had mental delusion, but that mental delusion was commonly shared at the exact same moment with multiple other pilots and I call them co-pilots or backseaters or weapon systems operators. So now, just follow me. To Occam's razor, these debunkers, you have to start by believing that one pilot had a massive mental delusion and that massive personal mental delusion was then shared by multiple other trained fighter pilots at the exact same time, at the exact same place, seeing the exact same thing. But let's just start beginning there. Now you have to also believe that our ground radar systems saw the mental delusion that all these pilots were sharing. Then you have to believe that our air radar systems were starting to share that mental delusion. And then the systems, the stuff they don't want you to know, that also were able to capture these TikTok UFO event series was sharing that delusion through its AI and pinging it to everybody else. And then you have to say everybody's bad at their job and that they didn't investigate it right. And that there's and the footage of it, I guess the mental delusion got caught up on visual as well. So just to drive this point home, Occam's fucking razor is that you shouldn't be listening to debunkers who try to impose upon you these series of absolute absurdities. I'm sorry. I'm done with it. I don't have time for this. I have time for people who are skeptical, who want to know the truth, not for people that go out their way to convince the public of a false narrative for clout and to get on TV shows. It's bullshit. And it's straight up, it's fucking bullshit. And here's the deal, man. It doesn't matter anyway. People got to make up their own minds. But that bullshit then translates over to things like what we're seeing what we're seeing at Congress the other day. You know, where did they get this outside analysis? But by the way, I know the people that wrote those reports. I know the people that actually dealt with defining these things as quote drones. I know why they defined them as drones. And in fact, I have eyewitnesses. So somebody sitting as a keyboard warrior behind their keyboard, you know, doing analysis and thinking that everybody else is stupid and wrong and delusional, even the AI and the technology except them. I mean, Occam's razor says you should probably ignore them a little bit because you're filling your mind with a ton of fucking bullshit. Horseshit.
Well, here's my problem, Jeremy. I went to school for video. There's a video camera back here. Like, that's what I learned in college. What Mick is saying about an aperture and the way light would reflect off that lens as it's going through is not wrong, right?
No,
so
no,
that's
it's
the
not
problem.
Wrong.
That's a problem for me is trying to be skeptical about it enough to where I don't feel gullible, right?
Right. No, and look, and it's not wrong, dude.
I'm saying is when we're looking at anything like this, including the Tic Tac or, you know, the pyramid footage or anything, it's amazing that there are multiple points or multiple ways to confirm, like you're saying, using ground radar and other pilots, co-pilots who are seeing it, other people on the ground who are seeing it. What makes my mind reel a little bit is that you've got Ronald Moultrie, who came on during yesterday's thing and specifically was stating that one of the biggest roadblocks they're dealing with is communication between different military groups and a lack of communication and also a lack of data. A lack of backup data, basically, other ways to look at a single event, which blows my mind because there is so much surveillance that's going on at all times when one of these events occurs.
They want it too. They want it. The Navy wants it from the NSA. The NSA wants it from geospatial. Geospatial wants it from CIA. CIA wants it from, you know, DI. It's insane. Yeah, it's a problem. But what's your point?
My point is you're saying that we've got all this footage, like just going back to the Nimitz or, you know, going back to the Tic Tac. We've got all of these points of data on that one thing, right? But then the person who's running this program that's supposed to be looking at it is coming forward and saying, we don't have enough data for a lot of these things, which just boggles my mind. I don't understand.
Right. So this is a huge problem and I totally get it. So you have to understand the people that were there testifying, they're like the top dogs that run stuff. They don't get into day by day. They didn't do the reports. I guarantee you that Bray, that, you know, head of the Navy, you know, or whatever he is officially, I guarantee, I saw it too. They were totally uninformed about the nuclear tampering historically by UFOs. And I know a lot of people involved that generated those reports and ran those programs. And here's the issue. You got a top brass guy like that come forward. First of all, his hubris, like he doesn't want to admit he hasn't been read into stuff, thrown in there, told to go in there. I guarantee you he has not read the massive report in the DIA on the Tic Tac UFO with direct witnesses and what they saw and all this stuff. So what, does he go on to like Twitter and listen to these debunkers and say, oh, that looks kind of smart, especially about the USS Russell thing? Oh, yeah, he must have. Oh, yeah, you can make something look green and triangular just like you can hold an orange and say, hey, that's circular. But like, do they not know? Anyway, so that I'm sharing your annoyance, but there is a path forward. And yesterday we began that path forward, and there's a lot happening behind the scenes that I can tell you for sure that path is moving. We're people are fighting fucking hard, man, and it's happening. So we don't got to get into the Green Pyramid thing. I'm gonna do something in the next 7 days that'll fucking fuck that shit up to begin with. But like, that's not the point right now, right?
I only bring that up, Jeremy, because I think so many people are fascinated by this, right? Like, so many people are listening right now that have that feeling of I want to believe, which is what I share, right? But I also don't want to be a sucker, man. And I know you feel that way. I know everybody feels that way. So that's why you work so hard at trying to like discover this stuff. I think it's just difficult to do what you do and to do now what we're all doing, just analyzing this stuff on our own and making our own decision about what is real and what is not.
Yeah, don't be a sucker, Matt. Don't be a sucker, but don't dismiss, like these debunkers you mentioned, don't dismiss all the evidence because you don't want to be a sucker. You don't have to choose a side. Just look at it all and don't believe everything you hear because somebody says it, right? Just because somebody says, you know, Jeremy said it's pyramid, and you know, he's a, you know, I don't know what they say. Like, you know, don't get caught up in the negativity. Just look at everything soberly, and don't be a sucker. Everything should be questioned. I am very open to the idea that I could be supplied false information to propagate, to make everybody be a sucker, especially me, to discredit me. I have fought so hard to make sure that is not the case. Verified it. That's why George Knapp and I work so well together, because we have different sources. So sure, one day I could fuck up. And if I do, I will admit it and say, please forgive me. Don't give up on me. I'm passionate about this. So don't worry about it. No one's going to be a sucker here. But what we're going to do is we're not going to close our minds off because we're fearful of what people will think of us, man. Let's move forward and do our best.
One response I would have to that is something I've said before in the past. There is a difference between skepticism, rational thinking, right? And practicing the calculus of assumptions and mental parkour that must be involved to arrive at someone's confirmation bias. But I would say there's a difference between being skeptical, which all people should, and sort of fetishizing your idea of skepticism, right? And that's very different from thinking rationally. Unfortunately, that's the case.
If you identify that you are a skeptic, you're fetishizing it rather than saying, I am skeptical.
You know what? Yes, well said. And this is exciting, because when this comes out, when this episode we're recording comes out, we will have hit the 7-day mark that you're alluding to earlier, or we will be well on the way toward it. So at this time, I know we're running a little short and we're starting to wrap stuff up, but we want to give the space to you, Jeremy, to talk a little bit about what's coming up in the future on your end, where people can learn more about your work, and you know, if there's any advice you have for folks who are trying to follow in your footsteps, I think that would be huge.
Well, my advice for people is to be as open and curious and ask questions and look into stuff and hear all sides, and don't take a position and defend it until you're absolutely confident, and then be willing to completely lose sight of the shore to discover new land if you find out new evidence. And I hope we all do that. And also just, you know, be forgiving of people. People get passionate about this. You know, on UFO Twitter, one of my friends, Ryan, they call him UFO Jesus from Post Disclosure World. He said something the other day just saying, like, ufology should, you know, bring us together, not divide us, you know, this common interest. So my kind of suggestion to people is, look, this is exciting, and it's exciting for a reason. And it's because so many people have experiences, and it's such a part of human culture, UFOs, that we can relate to it, but we have to feel kind of like accepted about it, right or wrong. We should be able to talk to one another with differences of opinions, should bond us for great conversation. Be weary of people that define themselves, their identities as skeptics, because you already know right there that they're not skeptical, that they've defined themselves to find the prosaic. And that's dangerous. It's really dangerous for everybody. So be, and also be, if people change their minds, be embracing of people making mistakes and changing their minds. Even the debunkers, you know what I mean? It's like, just like, you know, don't be a dick is a great rule.
The best rule.
It's the best rule, man. So for me, I think the next thing is that I'm trying to, as accurately as I can, report what I believe to know in the moment, right now, and to release to the world video evidence filmed by our military, which I have a lot of, and I need to make sure it's safe to do that on every level and doesn't harm anything. And you know, it's not everything. It's just they're actual just pieces to the puzzle. Some of it is very impressive, and some of it you need an education to understand how impressive it is. But I wouldn't release something boring. It's just a matter of education. So you can look out for me to hopefully be translating, if I do my job well, the basics of what's going on with this topic, because I'm an enthusiast of this topic. I'm an investigator of this topic. I'm a filmmaker. But most importantly, man, I'm just a guy who's been unqualified and feel like I shouldn't be in the room when I'm in the room a lot of the time. But I'm grateful to be there and people talk to me. And I hope I continue to do work that is embraced and that people enjoy it and they're entertained by it. And more importantly, that it changes the way that they engage the world around them, from their family to their jobs, that there's something that this passion for this, that it changes the way that they perceive those mundane moments in our lives, where instead of being like, shit, I don't want to do that, you kill that inner bitch and you're like, you know what? I'm going to fucking do it because life is fucking short and we don't have that much time. And we are going to be defined in our lifetime, not in our death, by what we do today. And so that's kind of my advice. So, you know, look, I drop everything on my Instagram and then my Twitter, and it's very easy to find me. I'm so easy to find, but that's where you'll see new releases first. So go follow at jeremycorbell.com and you'll see it there. And just please say nice things that are constructive, because I don't read much of it. But if people say bad things, I just delete it and go away and block it, and that's it. I just want, not arguments, I want arguments. Be kind to each other. I mean, in the comments, just be, when you talk, you'll learn a lot more if you're kind. So I don't know what my end message is, but weaponize your goddamn motherfucking curiosity, and don't get me fucking wrong. I'm serious about that. Participate. Don't be a passive consumer. Be an active participant in the mysteries you want solved.
And if you're a fan of long-form documentaries, definitely go to extraordinarybeliefs.com. You should see like some of the stuff that Jeremy has on there. The Skinwalker Ranch one, I think we talked about previously. Fascinating stuff. And the Bob Lazar documentary made. Just great stuff if you're curious about any of these topics.
Thank you, gentlemen. I have to jump, but I appreciate you so much. And I hope that we continue our thread text chain.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. It's an absolute pleasure. Again, extraordinarybeliefs.com. You can find the Instagram. You can find the Twitter. Stay tuned, folks. That was a ride. You know, I think there's a lot to unpack there. And I'm interested, I don't know about you guys, but I'm interested to see what some of this upcoming stuff is. You know, we didn't get to the secret hearing.
Love a good tease. Well, it's secret. There's nothing really to talk about. Except that it's secret. Obfuscated, I believe, was the word that was used, which I would agree with.
Well, we didn't even mention, I think this was a big piece of the news. You guys remember 11 months ago when we talked about that report that was 140-something, I think almost exactly 140 incidents that they were looking into?
Right. Now it's at 400.
Yeah. I mean, that's over double the number of individual incidents, which is at least a good thing, I think. Mm-hmm.
They also said that Deputy Director of Naval Intelligence, we mentioned earlier, also is one of the people who I believe said that they anticipate that number of incidents to go down as they're able to explain some stuff. But right now, the entire world is working live, and we appreciate you, fellow listeners, for tuning in with this. We want you to participate. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know your experiences, anecdotes, your takes on what ufology calls disclosure. We can't wait to hear from you. We try to be easy to find online.
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube at Conspiracy Stuff, on Instagram or Conspiracy Stuff Show. You can also give us a telephone call with your fingers and your mouth, or if, you know, hands free, whatever. Yeah, don't talk and drive or text and drive. But yeah, there's a number for that.
However you make phone calls, do dial 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, give yourself the coolest nickname you can think of. You've got 3 minutes. Say whatever you'd like. Let us know in that 3 minutes if we can use your name and message on the air, and then you will have done it. And we can't wait to hear from you. We're very excited. It's a cool topic. Let us know what you think. But if you've got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, why not instead send us an unlimited message? Just whatever your heart desires, to our email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeart Radio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.